Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. It's time to lace them up. This is Fight Night on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com. Fight Night is served up by the Quarter Deck. Come in for the food, stay for the fun. Now your hosts, Frank Saffery and Alex Dono.
Yes!
7 o'clock hour of Fight Night. It is Fight Night. I forgot to do that little ditty there. Fight Night here on WQAM. Alex Dono and Frank Saffery with you. In a moment, we'll have a new edition of the toss-up. Would you like Frank to hear Anderson Silva's second statement on his failed drug test?
Yes.
He has provisionally failed a USADA test. He was pulled off of the November 25th fight he had scheduled in Shanghai, China, against Calvin Gastelum. Michael Bisping took his place in that fight, which is wacky. A couple weeks ago, this guy just got knocked down and choked out by George St. Pierre. Now Bisping is fighting again in a couple of weeks, I guess, to try and save face or something. But so Anderson Silva, let me first read you the newsy part of this before we get to his statement. This was last Friday. Former UFC middleweight champion, all-time great Anderson Silva has been pulled from his November 25th fight because of a potential doping violation, according to the UFC. Officials announced Friday that the United States Anti-Doping Agency, USADA, has notified Silva, 42, of a potential violation from an out-of-competition sample collected October 26. UFC, at this time they were seeking a replacement. They have that replacement. It is Michael Bisping. Here is Anderson Silva's latest statement. To all my fans, thank you so much for all of the support you have shown me over the past week. This means a lot to both my family and I. I just want to keep you updated on what's going on now. My medical team, wow, I guess you're rich enough, you have your own medical team. My medical team is working very closely with USADA to find out the reason for my suspension of UFC Shanghai. Hopefully we will get more news very soon. I have been fighting for the past 20 years and always try to be an example to my fans and to my sport, except for that other time you also failed a drug test. Again, I want to thank all of you for your support and hope to see you soon for my next fight. So, okay, when he says my medical team is working very closely to figure out the reason for my suspension, it sounds an awful lot like the time that that OJ was on every golf course trying to find the real killer. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, well, we're working really hard to find out what this is, guys.
Yeah, what they're working really hard to do is figure out what supplement that would not indicate, you know, deliberate drug use can be found to contain enough of said banned substance to make it look as if it was accidental.
Do you have a hard time giving him the benefit of the doubt second time this has happened? But we both also understand, though, that the USADA drug testing, like it's such a sensitive battery of tests they put samples through that sometimes weird things can pop up. So, I mean, but at this point with Anderson Silva having failed tests now twice, is this starting to lose some legitimacy for you?
I don't know. What did he fail for this time?
They haven't announced it yet.
So I'll need to hear that. I mean, the last one was a erectile dysfunction drug.
Well, okay, baby, that's what he said he took had the banned substance in it.
But they gave him a pass on the amount of punishment they could have given him, meaning they gave some credence to what he was saying, and that made me angry just because there is no negotiated deal between a union and the governing body of the sport, in this case USADA's work for the UFC. So I tend to come out on the side of the fighters here when they're suspending guys for bootleg Cialis. That seems to be over the top in terms of what we're actually trying to accomplish in cleaning up the sport. You know, I'll be very interested. I'll have a more informed comment when I know what he was actually popped for.
You know, okay, so that event that he was pulled off of is taking place in China, in Shanghai. And when you're in a country that doesn't have their own athletic commission, the UFC functions as their own commission, and seems like they're bending one of their rules here because they are allowing Michael Bisping to take that fight with Gastelum 3 weeks after he was knocked down choked unconscious by George St. Pierre. Is that reckless?
Not even enough time, really, for those very deep lacerations to heal, I wouldn't think.
That's a great point, because he had cuts in that fight, you're right.
Yeah, deep ones. So, I'm worried about it. I mean, you know, Bisping's a gamer, but I'm worried about it on a couple of levels. One, it's too quickly after a devastating loss. I mean, he choked unconscious.
Yeah, like, you know, if he had, like, tapped out to a knee bar 30 seconds into the fight and not taken any real damage, then, yeah, you could see that. But, I mean, he got beaten up in that fight.
Yeah, I mean, towards the end, he suffered very deep lacerations, and he was choked unconscious. So they put those rules in place for a reason. I'm also worried that Michael's even continuing to fight. I'm not really sure at this point what he's aspiring to do, except maybe get a paycheck or try to make people forget about what happened a few weeks ago.
I think that's what it is. I think he wants to go out on a high note, and that can be a dangerous quest for a fighter who is getting to be over the hill. Like, I remember Jens Pulver doing that and losing like 5-6 fights in a row because he wanted to try and go out on a high note. It just became embarrassing after a while. BJ Penn has been doing the same thing.
Kelvin's got
looking for his high note.
Kelvin's got very big hands. And so it's not out of the question to imagine that Bisping could get knocked out in the first round here. And that's really not what you want your last two fights of your career to look like.
And I can understand why Bisping wants it, because he can essentially just piggyback this training camp onto the last one. So it's like you get two paydays for one training camp. I can understand him wanting to do that. I just think it's the UFC's job to protect him from himself at this point. I think that's where I'm at on it. But it is time, friends, to gather around your radio as if it's the 1920s and there's no televisions. It is time for a new edition of The Toss-Up.
Let's toss it up with The Toss-Up.
Oscar De La Hoya says he's been training.
Oh my God.
In boxing.
Ugh.
And he wants a fight with the notorious one, Conor McGregor. Would you pay to see this if it happened?
See, yeah, I would, because, again, such a spectacle. But I don't like it. I don't like the idea. Just because I would watch it doesn't mean I like the idea of it.
Well, you don't like it for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, you don't like it because it's just a spectacle, but even more of a spectacle because Oscar's coming out of retirement.
He hasn't fought since 2008. When he was worked by Manny Pacquiao, retired a few months after that. He hasn't fought since the waning days of the George W. Bush administration, and he's talking about coming out of retirement 9-some years later for a payday. And here's the big problem that I have with this is, you know that I'm not an Oscar De La Hoya fan. And, you know, actually, I didn't mind him as a fighter. Like, I enjoyed watching him, but personality-wise, biggest hypocrite on the planet. Biggest hypocrite, this Oscar De La Hoya. Do you remember the curse words he used and the colorful ways he described how much of a sham he thought the Mayweather-McGregor fight was, and how it's a disgrace to boxing and it should never happen. Conor has no right to come over to my sport. Like, he panned that fight, and now he wants to come out of 9 years of retirement to box Conor McGregor. Do you not see the hypocrisy there? I mean, does he now think it's okay since the seal's already been broken? Like, oh, now that he's already fought, I guess we have to accept that McGregor can now moonlight as a boxer. But no, incredibly hypocritical by Oscar De La Hoya to criticize every fiber of the integrity of Mayweather versus McGregor, yet now he wants to come out of retirement. And okay, I guess Mayweather was technically retired, but that was 2 years. De La Hoya has been retired 9+ years. And now he thinks it's okay for him to come out of retirement and box McGregor.
I'll tell you what he's trying to do, though, Alex. He's trying to make it apparent to people when he beats Conor very badly that Floyd threw the fight. That's his ambition.
See, I give Conor a pretty decent chance against De La Hoya. This 40-some years old, so retired for 9 years.
Even though it would take Conor away from the sport I love for a ridiculous amount of time,
yeah,
considering how long he's already been gone, there's a part of me that would like to see Oscar get beat up just because I know he's trying to suggest in his own what he hopes his own fight prowess.
Right, because he did say he thought that last fight was fixed.
So then he's going to say, look, Floyd could beat me like a drum, so clearly Floyd was carrying this bum. He's carrying these bums.
And you made another great point there, that if that fight were to happen, it would be another distraction to take McGregor out of the octagon for another several months. That's another reason I don't want it.
Yeah, where would they fight? 154 again?
Probably, yeah.
The Bellator heavyweight tournament has its first fight. And by the way, just let that sink in, because Scott Coker did a great deal at Strikeforce. One of the best things he did for that league.
The heavyweight Grand Prix.
And he's got another one brewing here for Bellator. And its first fight is Frank Mir versus Fedor, one of your favorite fighters. Thoughts on that matchup, but more specifically, your thoughts on the tournament as a whole.
You know, I think that Fedor actually has a chance against Frank Mir, assuming he's not juiced to the gills on like some sort of testosterone replacement
therapy. It's okay there, because they're going to be on an Indian reservation.
That's true. They don't have the same restrictions that the UFC has. But no, I think Fedor has a shot in that fight, because Frank Mir, he's not overwhelmingly large. Like, it's not like a Bigfoot Silva type of opposition where he's going to lay on Fedor. I think Fedor's got a shot in that matchup. And, of course, the Fedor we've been watching for the last 3-4 years since he came out of retirement, it's not been the same Fedor that was dominating Pride. Not even the same Fedor that was losing fights in Strikeforce. Like, Fedor is a step slower than he used to be. He's still, though, relatively quick from heavyweight standpoint. I think he's got a shot against Frank Mir. So let's look at the other contenders in this heavyweight tournament. The only thing that's funny about this heavyweight tournament are half the guys in here are light heavyweights, but I guess Bellator doesn't have enough depth at heavyweight at the moment, and they need to crown a champion. But Roy Nelson, that's a heavyweight. He's in the tournament. Let's see. Rampage and King Mo are in the tournament. So those are a couple of light heavyweights. Chael Sonnen, who used to be a middleweight, I guess now he's technically a light heavyweight, or now technically a heavyweight because he's in the tournament. Matt Mitrione, another former UFC fighter, is in there. And Fedor and Ryan Bader is also in the tournament. So that's another light heavyweight. So half of the field there are light heavyweights.
Isn't that their light heavyweight champion?
Yeah. But he's moving up to heavyweight for the Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's weird, because when Scott Coker did this so well in Strikeforce, he had a stable of studs in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, they had the Arlovskis and the Josh Barnetts and Bigfoot Silva.
And they had Daniel Cormier on reserve.
Yeah, he wasn't even really in the tournament. He won the tournament as an alternate.
Right.
Alistair Overeem was also in that tournament. Yeah, I mean, they had a stacked heavyweight roster in Strikeforce that they don't have right now in Bellator.
Yeah, and this is basically just to get all the biggest guys we've got on the roster, regardless of the division they're in, and let's make a tournament.
I think it's a good headline maker, though. I think that this is something good to bring attention to Bellator. Better this bring attention to Bellator than Conor McGregor shoving referees. Like, I think this is a more positive step.
Tyron Woodley versus Nate Diaz is rumored for UFC 219. What are your thoughts, Diaz lover?
That I hope Tyron approaches this fight as he's approached a lot of his recent fights is, I'm going to stand and bang. And he's obviously very careful. Like, bang is probably the wrong word, but I'm going to stand up with my opponent. Like, bang would imply that he's reckless, getting into firefights. Like, that's not Tyron's game. He kind of waits for you to punch first, and he tries to counter. But I hope he doesn't turn into a wrestler or turn back into a wrestler, because that could be a recipe for disaster for Nate Diaz, to be held down by a Tyron Woodley who decides, I'm going to clinch and take him down the entire fight. But I think if he decides to stand with Nate, you know Nate's going to be aggressive and bring the fight to him. Like, honestly, I think it's very strategic for Tyron to want a fight like this, because a guy like Stephen Thompson, who he produced two underwhelming fights with, that's not the best dance partner for him, because they're both reactionary fighters. They're both counterpunchers. Nate Diaz will come forward and bring the fight to you. So I think Tyron understands that, okay, he feels like that's a winnable fight for him because he is such a power, pinpoint, accurate striker. And Nate Diaz is the type of opponent that's going to bring the fight to me and make it interesting.
There's another angle to this. If Nate Diaz does get this fight with Tyron, it could potentially be a way to legitimize Conor facing Nate Diaz in the future. Because right now, it's just, why are you fighting this guy over and over again? Fight other guys. But if he goes in there and has success, and what if he takes the belt from Tyron?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's a way to maybe get – it's a shot at maybe figuring out a way to legitimize getting Conor and Nate in for round three.
And that'd become a mega fight. It already a third fight between those guys would be a mega fight, but if they both had belts, it'd be huge.
Do we have one more? Time for one more?
Still
all
one
right.
more.
What's worse right now, in your opinion? The PED epidemic in mixed martial arts, because we see our guys going down all over the place.
Like flies.
Or the sexual harassment epidemic that is just taking over Hollywood and Washington, D.C.
I saw this photo yesterday of, you know, what the Academy Awards will look like this year, and it's just Meryl Streep sitting in an empty theater. Frank, like, there's nobody left. And you know, obviously this is terrible, and, you know, I'm sure that some of these allegations are a lot more true than others. If there's any shred of truth to any of them, they're all very bad. Like, there's no excuse for this kind of behavior. But it's like every day, like 3-4 people go down. Directors, actors, producers, studio heads. Like, who has not groped somebody?
Did you see Senator Franken and the photos that were out
last night
today?
Jeez. Sylvester Stallone is on that list now.
Yeah, they're all killing each other. I mean, I thought the one that really shook me, and now I'm going to blank his name, but the guy
Kevin
Spacey.
Yeah, same here.
What a talent.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And we'll probably not see him again.
But, like, who's left? Like, we're just going to have to put, like, DiCaprio and Christian Bale in every movie. I've not heard anything about them, have I?
No, I hope not.
I hope not, too. It's like you got two actors left.
Emilio Estevez is still available.
They're going to start, like, you remember, like, back in the Shakespeare days, the Mighty Duckman himself, like, in the Shakespeare days when men had to play women, like, they're now going to have women playing men because there's no men left to be
in
movies.
Right. Well, it is troubling, the culture that has been going on there like that with just absolutely no oversight.
Oh, they're draining the swamp.
But let's
now
get it back to mixed martial arts for a second and the PED epidemic, because it's an epidemic in enforcement.
Yeah.
I just think they need to narrow down what they're looking for. I think the fighters need a voice in this process. There's really no need to look at parts per million below a certain point, because then, yeah, you catch the estrogen blocker, one part per a trillion, and it means the guy took a erectile drug, you know, 8 weeks ago, and it's there. And I hate seeing guys go down for that. Forget the marijuana, too. Forget it.
Right. I was going to say, because it kind of reminds me of the marijuana, because they, like, a couple times they've had to up the threshold, because it used to be, like, a really minimal amount of nanograms per milliliter. I can't remember the exact number, but it used to be a real minimal amount. Like, if you had smoked, like, 4 weeks prior, they'd still catch you, and they've had to raise that threshold a little bit. I would like to see them raise thresholds for a lot of this other stuff.
Yeah, and just focus on the things that are really have the biggest chance of getting fighters hurt or otherwise making the sport, you know, not realistic. You know, anabolic steroids, testosterone, things like that. Things that I think that they can go after and focus on. But, you know, EPO and drugs like that that were big with the cyclists for cardio. But, you know, I don't really care about Cialis and marijuana. And I don't think fans do either.
You.
And they're not performance enhancing. So,
yeah, a friend of ours once got he wasn't pulled out of the fight because they didn't catch him till after. But a friend of ours had a victory changed to a no contest at one point because he had taken an Ambien the night before the fight, as if that's enhancing his performance.
Yeah, anything that hurt his performance. Probably.
Seriously, like you take one of those, you can't remember anything.
I wonder if it was the first time he took them, because sometimes they can have a weird effect where you can't wake up the next day. That would have been unfortunate.
We're talking with our buddy Joe Rizzo, host of Rear Naked Choke Radio. Cyborg is coming back, Frank. Cyborg is fighting Holly Holm on December 30th for her UFC women's featherweight belt. So a big title defense coming up in the women's division. Joe Rizzo is like an expert in women's MMA. We're going to talk to him about that and a lot of the other stuff going on, from Anderson Silva to Fabricio Verdum throwing boomerangs at people in Australia. Fight Night continues next here on WQAM.
He represents the biggest names. This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. Listening to Fight Night, served up by the Quarter Deck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
It is Fight Night. Alex Dono and Frank Chaffrey with you until 8 o'clock tonight. I'll continue till 10 o'clock this evening. just going to, I don't know, I'm going to try to stay awake tonight. I have to wake up at about 6 a.m. tomorrow, Frank, for 8 a.m. pregame tomorrow at Hard Rock Stadium.
About 6 hours earlier than you normally arise on a Saturday?
Six sounds about right.
Yeah. Set the alarm for noon. Big day.
Big Canes football day tomorrow. And our next guest is actually a big Canes football fan, and he also is the host of Rear Naked Choke Radio at RNC Radio on Twitter. You can follow him on Twitter at Rear Naked Choke. Joe Rizzo joins us now here on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Joe, I know you enjoyed last Saturday, my man. How you feeling?
How am I feeling? Let's just say this. I got myself ready for this spot with you guys by watching I'm Hurt Dog about 12 times in a row.
Ed Reed, baby. Okay. That is so great.
That's what I am bringing tonight. Hey, Frank, has Notre Dame gotten to 10 points yet?
No, but that's an amusing comment. But we're still around. We accepted our loss like men.
I
stayed for the game.
You.
I was there. I wore my colors. And I look forward to seeing the Mighty Hurricanes again, hopefully not in the too distant future.
Wow.
Well, at least you showed up. On to MMA, boys.
Yeah, you, Joe, talk to me about Cyborg Holly Holm. I'm glad that this fight has come together. I'm glad Cyborg is getting a new contract. How do you see the fight playing out? Because obviously, you know, Holly has not been on the best run in the UFC aside from the huge victory over Ronda Rousey. But I feel like she is, with the way she fights, a very tough matchup for anybody.
This is a good fight. I mean, listen, anytime we can get Cyborg in the cage with somebody who appears that is going to be able to test her, which, you know, this certainly should be the biggest test of her, you know, of her career, because Holm is just so much more of a polished professional. And, you know, the other thing is, even though she's fought a lot and been 135-pound champion, Holly Holm is unlike a lot of Cyborg's other opponents in that she can really carry the weight and not lose so much size going up to 145. So that's been a distinct difference in most of Cyborg's fights where she's fought, even when she was fighting like at 140 in some of those fights in the past. But like at 145... there's such a power difference and such a size difference that really, you know, she only has to land one of those brutal shots to just completely turn the fight over. And, you know, against Holm, I mean, Holm wants you to come at her. The more aggressive Holm's opponents are with their fists and with their kicks, actually the better Holly Holm usually performs. It's when opponents lean back and wait for Holly Holm to attack. That's when she's had a lot of the trouble, like against Raquel Pennington, say, as an example. You know, Pennington was not somebody that really looked like she should have been in Holm's league. And Holm did win, like, a very close decision, which I thought she actually lost. But Pennington made her bring the fight to her instead of having to counter. Cyborg does not fight like that. Cyborg is going to run through hell and high water to stalk you, chase you down, cut off the cage. And, again, the size advantage shouldn't be as evident. I mean, she always is going to look bigger, but even from a height standpoint and a reach standpoint, she's actually going to be at a little bit of a, you know, an even play or even a slight disadvantage in some of those numbers, which she almost never is. So I like the matchmaking. I think it's a good fight. You know, we were going to see Megan Anderson, I guess, in that spot at some point. She ended up having like some kind of visa issues a couple of months back and had to, you know, pull out of that fight. And, you know, obviously, now that they're rescheduling this thing for December 30th in Las Vegas, you know, I guess if it was going to be in Australia, maybe Megan Anderson could have done it. But, you know, they still have to figure out something there. And you know what? That's fine. It's probably better for the 145-pound division today if we see this fight now and still give Megan Anderson a little bit more time to cook. You know, she can get a few more fights maybe under her belt before she's ready, you know, to fully give the best performance that she can against Cyborg if she ever wants to be the one to dethrone her if Holm doesn't get there first. I like the fight. You know what else, though? Jimmy Rivera at 135 is also on that card, too. And he's a guy that, you know, he's from, you know, really literally my neck of the woods. I've known him since, you know, before he could walk into a bar and get a legal drink. Not that he even does anyway at this point. He's a very local guy to where I am in North Jersey. and he can't be too far. You know, if he wins whoever they give him against whoever they give him here.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you if you have any idea, if you suspect who they're going to give him now that Dominic Cruz is out of that fight.
Yeah, I don't know who they're going to. I mean, obviously, if Cruz didn't have to get removed for the broken arm, then, you know, for certain that would have been, you know, a winner gets next shot at the title. So I don't really know. I mean, I think it still is for Jimmy. I think it still is, regardless of what kind of opponent they put in there. And now we're talking about, you know, Cruz pulled out, I guess, about, you know, something like 10 days ago, something like that. And, you know, they haven't named an opponent yet, but I have a feeling it's because they're probably trying to pick somebody a little bit on the better side rather than making it, you know, a walkover type person for Jimmy Rivera. So I think whoever they put in there, I feel comfortable that if Jimmy Rivera wins that fight, he's going to get a title shot for his next one. But if he loses it, I wouldn't say, you know, that's going to depend on whoever his opponent actually is. So we'll see. But I'm intrigued because Jimmy's, you know, Jimmy and I go back a while, and it's kind of like, you know, the American Top Team guys with you guys that pop into studio. That's like Jimmy Rivera is like that guy to me.
And, you know, in that bantamweight division, what do you see TJ Dillashaw's next move being? I know what he wants to do. He wants to go down to 125 to take on Demetrius Johnson. Do you see that fight getting consummated? And is that the right move for Dillashaw to go down, or should after Demetrius has done pretty much anything a man can do in that weight class, should he be moving up to fight Dillashaw?
I'm a little torn on that. I'll sort of believe it when I see it. And, you know, I don't know that Demetrius Johnson is just going to let it go at 125. What if Demetrius says, oh, no, I want to go up to 135 and fight him up there. So, you know, the one thing I don't think we'll see if those guys fight is a catchweight. I think they'll either fight at 125 or 135. And then funny thing is, and I kind of thought about this scenario before, if that fight ends up being close, forget which weight it's at the first time, it would be kind of interesting if that's like a split decision or a really close fight, a contested fight, they could do a rematch at the opposite weight for a title again, right?
Yeah. I mean,
so that there's a little bit of an intriguing possibility there. I think maybe for that reason, that's sort of the reason, guys, that I feel like they would almost do the fight at 135 rather than 125.
I think first, I'm with you on
because
that.
Then if they rematch, they could do it at 125. So, you know, either way, I think that adds a little bit of intrigue in there to me. But I'm not sure, you know, with Dillashaw's schedule and everything and how things go with Rivera, that, you know, I mean, I could imagine Rivera versus Dillashaw in March somewhere, you know, as we come back from the sort of like, you know, usually like that, you know, Super Bowl card is kind of the only thing that's happening. That's a big, big card in the UFC, at least North American-wise. That's usually what it's like, you know, for the first couple of months of the year, and then they come back with a bigger event in March. I could see those guys being on there, but I suppose I could look at the whole schedule and see if they have other big events planned. But really, you know, the schedule doesn't look like it's too crazy in that time. You know, they're going to Australia, they're going to Texas, Orlando, Boston. You know, I don't think there's anything like really, really huge in there where they couldn't fit that fight in, and like, you know, maybe in March in UFC 222 or something. I mean, I'm just throwing stuff against the wall, but interesting stuff nonetheless. It at least gives us something to look at for two of those divisions in the lighter weights. I mean, 135 has a lot of excitement. There's really no shortage there, but 125 has really been, you know, just so dominated by Demetrius Johnson that, you know, it's nice to see a little intrigue, at least something for us to discuss there.
Joe Rizzo, host of Rear Naked Choke Radio, joining us here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. You know, Joe, of course, we've talked quite a bit tonight about Conor McGregor, his antics in the Bellator cage with his friend Charlie Ward, the little altercation he had with Mark Goddard, the referee, which, well, I say little altercation, but it was a very big deal to me. And obviously the punishment would be more severe if it wasn't Conor McGregor. But isn't it a little bit of a sham for the UFC to come out and say, well, okay, we're pulling him off of a December 30th fight when I don't think he was ever really planning on fighting December 30th, and our punishment is we're not going to let him fight until April, when that's probably when he was planning to fight in the first place?
I don't really know that I could add much to that because I think I pretty much agree with everything you said. And I think the excuse is, well, you know, it didn't happen in a UFC cage. So that makes it kind of, you know, they don't have to sort of come down on him as hard as they otherwise would. I mean, by the time he fights again in a UFC cage, how long is it going to be since the last time he fought in a UFC cage as opposed to a UFC?
Like a year and a half, right? I think it's going to have been a long time.
Yeah, it's going to have been a long time by the time he does that. So, you know, convenience, yes. They were taking advantage of something that happened and were able to just say, oh, you know what, we might as well just say we're pulling him off of the December 30th card and not let, you know, these super loyal Irish fans spend money speculatively to fly out to Vegas or something for December 30th. I mean, what we talk about over here is the idea that there would be some kind of card, some UFC card added to Madison Square Garden for March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, that would feature Conor McGregor. I mean, my friends literally have a thread that's talking about this now and texting. So, and what a show that would be with, you know, on St. Patrick's Day in New York City to have Conor McGregor fight at the Garden would just be, you know, Let's face it, complete insanity.
I would want to go up there for that, to be honest with you.
And well, yeah, but here's the thing: there's a card in London that same night. However, that is a UFC fight night, 127, and UFC 222 is March 3rd, which we were just talking about in Vegas. So theoretically, they could do a second one kind of there if they wanted to have the Garden and if all things went. I didn't even know if the Garden's open. I mean, I didn't look at the Knicks or Rangers schedule or anything like that. But I know, Alex, you don't want to talk about hockey because then we're going to get into the Devils beating the Panthers.
That's
but I'm
right.
Not
you got me,
that.
My friend. You got me.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention that either. yeah, that would be cool, though. I mean, I know people would be going nuts for that over here if it actually did happen, but more just speculation. Nothing on the schedule, but nothing scheduled past March 17th in the UFC calendar, as far as I know. The last thing I see scheduled is March 17th, O2 Arena in London. Again, that is a fight night card, and it wouldn't conflict with a North American headlining UFC 223 card.
And so, Joe, last thing here is, you know, the Conor McGregor story, I would say, is assault related. So let's stay on the assault tip. I got to get your thoughts on two guys, you know, Colby Covington and the game that he's playing, trolling an entire country, whether that's really going to backfire on him. And then Fabricio Werdum throwing a boomerang at him. Who throws a boomerang? Seriously.
But, you know, if you throw it well, I mean, that's kind of maybe kudos. I mean, no, it's showmanship. I mean, obviously Covington's doing it to troll, and he's doing it to build his name, and he's doing a good job of it. And Werdum clearly is taking it personal, and he's taking it personally on behalf of his country. So he's just, you know, he's just not letting, he doesn't want to let the guy get away with it. And it ends up being press for both guys, right? I mean, look, we're talking about it, aren't we?
That's true.
You know, what does it really amount to in the end? Like, it's not like those guys are ever going to fight each other, are they?
So, no.
You know, if they did, then, I mean, I know who I would bet on.
Yeah,
but
well, maybe that'll be like, if they bring back Pride, that'll be like an open weight Grand Prix fight.
Yeah, I don't think they're bringing back Pride anytime soon, though. But you never know. You never know. And some of those Japanese fights, they still do it under, you know, all kinds of different names, right? And they love those kind of unique matchup fights, at least, you know, still I think they do. But anyway, do I have to give out any winners for Gulfstream Park West tomorrow? Oh, sorry, wrong job.
So you would actually be able to give a hot tip on that? I'll take a winner.
Oh, boy. Let's see. I need like 1 second. I think I had one up on my phone here. I'm going to cheat and use one of my DRF colleagues' picks if I have it. Hold on. Oh, this is, I'm not doing well in the segment. I'm not doing well in the segment here. I don't have it. I thought I had it on my back screen.
Well, why don't you, if you text it to me, I will blast it out. I want to win the people some money.
I know. I want to win the people some money, too. But usually I'm much better at losing the money for the people. That's why I'm, you know, that's why I'm not a professional handicapper. I just play one on TV. I don't even play one on TV anymore. It's hard to get those TV gigs as a handicapper. Wait, hold on. I think I might be able to get it.
Hold on. We got it. We have a winner.
Was it fifth race?
I just want to hear if it's the name of Hockman's horse. One of our hosts here is like he owns like 1/64th of a racehorse. I want to hear if it might be his. I can't remember the name, I'll know it when I hear it.
Hopefully he doesn't own the worst 64th of it. It's race 5, Gulfstream Park West Saturday. Number 9, see ya in the test barn. That's what we'll go with. My colleague Mike Welch is best bet for tomorrow. So I'll give kudos to Mike Welch. I fixed his computer once.
What a name. I love that.
Yeah.
He is Joe Rizzo.
There it is.
You want to follow this man on Twitter at Rear Naked Choke. He is the host of RNC Radio. Joe, thank you so much for the time, man. This guy does everything. Can talk cyborg, can talk Verdum throwing boomerangs, can talk horse racing. Joe, I cannot thank you enough, my friend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Alex and Frank.
Thank you.
See you in the test barn.
The test barn.
Where do people come up with these horse names?
I don't know. They're very creative, though.
They're usually like some kind of a pun or like a slogan.
Yes. I didn't know Hawk owned 1/64th of a racehorse.
I made up that fraction, but it's probably something like in that range. He actually said he owned 1/16th of the anus. I think that was his exact words. I'll leave it at that. Fight Night concludes next here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. To Fight Night, served up by the Quarter Deck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Fight Night continues here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. About 10 minutes, I'm going to talk Dolphins with Omar Kelly when the Alex Dono show begins. I got to admit, Frank, that it was very difficult last week to get pumped for an NFL Sunday and then, well, eventually Monday night when the Dolphins played and they lost terribly. But it was very difficult for me last week to get pumped for an NFL Sunday because all I wanted to do was rewatch highlights of Miami Notre Dame.
That's usually what I do is watch college football replay on one of those myriad of ESPN channels they have. They do the college
ESPNU maybe?
They do the game day rewind.
And
it's an hour show. It's pretty good. And I watch it over and over and over again.
Yeah, because I get mad how like quick the turnaround is. Like on like ESPN 1 and 2 and ESPN News, like as soon as like 12:01 a.m. hits on Sunday, they switch right over to all NFL wall to wall. It's like I'm still trying to relive my college game
day. I know that NFL is number one, but do you think we could see a day when college football becomes the dominant football?
Oh, no. Well, if
concern
anything,
in the United States.
With the way the NFL is going, where you've got like a civil war between Jerry Jones and the commissioner, you've got people upset about guys taking knees, you know, the ratings are lower than they've been in many years. We may already be trending in that direction because I don't think the ratings are down for college football. I think college football is alive and well.
Yeah, outside of Kane's Hard Rock Stadium on Saturday, there was a guy flying an airplane encouraging, because it was also Veterans Day that Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
There were planes flying banners, please do not watch the NFL on Sunday. I thought that was interesting. Yeah.
Like, at some point, though, can, like, people separate the idea that, you know, guys taking a knee, it's not necessarily them spitting in the face of the troops? Like, maybe that's not their intention? Like, well, why do people have to automatically make that leap?
I don't know. I think it's because, you know, maybe I'm a little bit older, but we were all raised in a society where you began each day, no matter how you felt about who was in the class or what was going on or what happened at the house or whatever, you stood up for the Pledge of Allegiance.
That's
true. You stood up for that flag.
I did that.
And, you know, the rest of your day, you go about it as you see fit. But you, everybody was the same with that. And I think you've got kind of that old guard clashing with a new guard that is finding a new way, maybe, to tweak the buttons of the old guard and try to motivate some adjustment, I guess, or some changes. But I don't know how effective it is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
And I certainly don't think the NFL has handled it very well.
Not at all.
Not at all. I couldn't really have handled it worse.
A couple of fight notes before we wrap it up. Dave Meltzer, the pay-per-view wizard. We got to have him back on the show soon. He's a friend of ours. But Dave Meltzer released the pay-per-view estimates, North American pay-per-view estimates for GSP versus Bisping from UFC 217. I was going to ask you what your over-under was, but I think I already told you during the break what the number was, so it wouldn't be fair. Wouldn't be fair to ask.
I thought it might hit a million.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, because Dana White said over a million. Okay, so here, and this, keep in mind, North American estimate. That doesn't include other continents. Early estimates have UFC 217, the show on November 4th, headlined by George St. Pierre's welterweight title win. I think he misspelled middleweight when he wrote, that was a typo. He meant to say middleweight, but he wrote welterweight, over Michael Bisping. The show is estimated to have done 875,000 pay-per-view buys in North America. The number would be the highest of the year and best since Amanda Nunes versus Ronda Rousey, December 30th of 2016. Now, after the show, UFC president Dana White said it was trending to blow past 1 million buys. The North American number, as Meltzer notes, would not include Australia, where the show did very well, he says, nor pay-per-view buys on the internet. Okay, so I guess it's possible that they're both right, that the North American pay-per-view estimate is 875,000, but that doesn't mean Dana White was wrong when he said it blew past a million, because if you include Australia and you include internet, I could easily see it breaking that number.
And that, if that's the case, too, then it's very fortunate for the UFC that George Ross St. Pierre won, because then that means he's back in form as a million-plus pay-per-view earner for the league, and with a win means he will fight again.
And I hope he fights again, because he's very non-committal in that. Because the contract that he signed says he's got to defend the middleweight title, yet I don't see him as having any intention of doing that. Like, I don't think he cares to fight Robert Whittaker. I think he wants to fight Tyron Woodley or maybe a Diaz brother or a McGregor next. I don't think he has any interest in fighting Whittaker.
No, I don't think he does. Everyone in his camp says he doesn't, and he won't, and he will instead, I hope, fight Tyron. But do you know, quickly, Alex, Tyron had a labrum tear, I believe, in his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, he could be out a while. Wow. What's the do we have any update on his prognosis? I mean, he's negotiating allegedly with Nate Diaz.
Yeah, I don't know, because every time like we've talked to Dean about it, like his coach, he's never really given us a straight answer, which means he probably doesn't know. Maybe Tyron doesn't know.
Let's find that out for next week. Let's put down our to-do list, because we're back in just a couple of days.
Wait, we're back on Monday.
We're back on Monday.
You know, and real quick, I wanted to mention that I know Cub Swanson is upset. He's frustrated that he was passed over for the upcoming featherweight title shot, because Frankie Edgar had to pull out injured against Max Holloway. And so the UFC really had two options. They could give Jose Aldo, the former champion, the shot, or they could go to Cub Swanson, who, surprisingly enough, has never fought for a title in the very good career that he's had. They gave the nod to Aldo, despite, you know, him having lost the belt recently to Holloway. I think there's two reasons why they did this. Number one, Aldo, he is the best featherweight of all time, greatest featherweight champion of all time. I don't think he's far enough removed from a title reign to say it's ridiculous to give him a shot. So I've got no issue with that side of it. And for Cub Swanson, I think what really hurts him here is that his next fight is the final fight of his UFC contract. And they don't like to, for obvious reasons, give a title fight to a guy on the last fight of their contract. Because if they win, they have a ton of leverage.
Yeah, right. You nailed it.
So we're done?
I think we're done. I had to get through today. Today was going to be a tough one. I had to come in here. You had that stupid anthology of low life for the game.
Well, let's hear this one more time on the way out.
Jones,
the Alex Donner Show is coming up next, but this is a tribute to Frank Zaffrey's Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Good luck with the Cavaliers.
It's Jaquan Johnson, and Johnson is brought down at the Notre Dame 35, and this place is going crazy. Give him the turnover chain for the fourth time.
We've made listening easy. This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
This podcast was presented by David Lowe and Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.